Okay, it is August 21st. It's Sunday afternoon, and I'm Thomas Robb.
Thanks, Bob.
Andrew Thomas.
Rachel's not here tonight.
Again.
She's doing things with Ray at the office and stuff like that. Being late for Congress, which we all are, but we do it at different times. But anyway, so we just welcome everyone. It's a nice day out, actually. We got a lot of rain around here in the Ozarks, but today's Sunday. It's been in the early 80s or low 80s, I should say, and been really, really nice.
Well, normally, I shouldn't say normally, but quite often, this time of year, the ground is a stubbly brown, crispy, dead grass.
Right.
And and there's the chance that we won't have a cross lighting because there'll be a burn ban. And so this time of year, sometimes the rains maybe will start up. The burn ban can lift it just in time. But there's been a few years when the burn ban was not lifted and we were unable to have our cross lighting in our Congress.
Well, we won't have to worry about this year because we literally have had it rain about at least once or twice a week.
Yeah.
For the past several weeks. And the grass just keeps on growing. It's nice and lush. So there won't be no problems at all.
In fact, we have a hard time getting out there cutting the grass because it rains so much.
Right.
And the grass has to be dry to cut it. You can't cut it all wet.
Yeah, it'll be all clumpy.
Yeah. So
it seems like it's every other day.
Yeah. So trying to get out there to cut the grass is going to be difficult.
Right.
Now, Andrew here, if the lawnmower can't cut the grass because it clunks up like that, Andrew's volunteered to take a pair of scissors.
Pair of scissors.
Yeah, and go down there, down on the knees, and clip, 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 clip.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like a goat, get down there and start chewing.
No.
I don't really think I agreed to that.
Sure, I heard you say that. Yeah. And go clip, 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 clip. And he could probably get the whole yard cut with his scissors and probably do a better job. Probably won't take maybe a couple months.
Yeah, I think he'd be doing really good.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't think I'll be in town for the conference, though.
Well, I know, but people come by and watch you. You give demonstrations.
Oh.
We could put like a rope barrier around you, and people you'd be like a reality show,
right?
You know, and people watch. There's Andrew clipping the grass. Look at that! Wow, what precision! You know,
I don't think that would work. I don't think that. Would. But those listeners out there, if this is the first time tuning in,
we're not really this crazy all the time.
We're not that crazy. And when we're talking about a conference, we're talking about the nice party family Congress conference that's coming up on Labor Day weekend, September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. It's a three-day weekend, a family event.
It's 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, it literally is 2 weeks. And
well, 2 weeks from today will be over with, well, almost over with.
Yeah, so that Friday, Saturday, Sunday is Labor Day weekend. And a lot of activities are planned for the Congress. We have people coming in around 5 or 6 o'clock on Friday. Just kind of give you a little schedule here, 5 or 6 o'clock on Friday, people come in out of state and of course in Ozarks and Arkansas area, but they come in, we have what was called a meet and greet, and the local church members will have desserts and kind of for people that are traveling, you know, for could be 8 hours flying in, whatever it could be.
Well, they'll have a supper before they come out. But
well, yeah, that's why it's called a meet and greet. Yeah, and with the dessert. They're not coming out for supper, obviously.
Right.
But it's a meet and greet just to kind of give them a warm welcome. And then Saturday, we have that's when our conference really gets going. And we have speakers throughout the day. We have music. We have entertainment. We have a children conference that coincides with the regular conference. And in the children conference, you know, we have the kids are being taught about their history and they have a right to preserve their race and culture. And they have fun activities. They go hiking and stuff like that. And then the regular conference, of course, like I said, we have speakers and we have singing. And we have the Heritage Connection and Steve and Bonnie from Oklahoma, a Christian a ministry group, a couple in Tulsa area. And then we have Ice Cream Social on Saturday evening. And then, of course, Sunday, we have our church. And we have some more speakers and entertainment. And then Sunday, we have our traditional cross lighting.
Right.
And so it's a really a great, great time. And people can camp out. They can pitch a tent. We have a couple cabins that people can rent a bunk bed. $10 a night. We ask for that. That helps upkeep.
And the cabins also have air conditioning.
Air conditioning, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a first come, first serve. So you need to let us know if you plan on staying at one of the men's cabins or women cabin. We do not have a transition cabin.
Don't have a transgender cabin.
We do not have that. And so you need to let us know if you want to stay in one of those cabins and let us know because it is a first come, first serve.
I put a post on the local Harrison Facebook board yesterday saying that our friends in the area who would like to attend our conference are welcome because a lot of people get on that, so they're all welcome to attend and contact me and for directions because there's a lot of people in the local area here that don't come out to church or come to our conferences, but they post friendly messages on Facebook. And so I put that out last night and somebody responded with this just a question, is everybody welcome? And I don't know, to me that kind of raised a little red flag. So I clicked on them, and of course it's some woman who's involved in a lesbian relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't respond to it because I'm not going to respond to this stuff. But the point is, so back to your transgender cabins. No, we don't have transgender cabins or lesbian cabins or cabins for any type of sodomites because they're not welcome.
Right.
Our church is probably one of the few churches in the country that could have a sign, you may not be welcome.
Right.
Or everybody is not welcome.
Right.
Most churches, everybody's welcome. No, everybody's not welcome to our church.
Oh, you could have a sodomite couple go to any church and the pastor most likely will not tell them to leave. They'll let them go in. They'll let them sit there and
stay for the social.
Stay for the social, but they're not going to say, "Well, okay, you're."
And they'll remark. They're so good with kids.
Yeah, they're so good with kids. So friendly. They're really a nice couple.
Yeah,
they're
living in sin, but they're really nice people.
They're an abomination of God, and God detests those type of actions, sinful actions of nature, and He does not tolerate it.
But they're very nice people.
Well, what's funny is yesterday I was driving through a bank when I left work Friday. And in front of me, there was a vehicle that I remember seeing at the Harrison Pride Festival, which was the first sodomite festival in Harrison a few weeks ago. And of course, on a side note, vast majority of those people were from Harrison. They were from Little Rock and Fayetteville.
And there weren't that many here anyway.
There wasn't that many. I mean, it was a very, very small crowd. But was thing is, I was behind the car and of course, they like to flaunt their sodomite lifestyle because on the back of the window of this car was the rainbow flag and then had celebrate diversity. And then, of course, the word coexist, And I'm thinking in my mind, celebrate diversity. If you really want to celebrate diversity, then you're not in favor of interracial marriage.
Right.
You're not in favor of anything that's going to destroy the balance of God's creation. You're not going to destroy that. So if you really want to celebrate diversity, then why are you promoting that? Of course, we know why, So, but I was just thinking about that when I was behind that, because all the time we talk about, we're the ones that actually celebrate diversity.
We believe in the differences of people.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so.
So there's a man or woman driving that.
It was a woman, And it may have been one of the sponsors of the event, because I remember seeing the car there. And so anyway, I was just thinking about that. But the lady, I guess, whoever said, is anyone welcome? Well, of course not. Not anyone's welcome. Yeah. We do have standards. But these sodomites, they want to be accepted. They want people to accept their lifestyle. They're furious if someone's not accepting their filthy lifestyle.
What I find amazing and at the same time upsetting is when you hearing conservatives like Sean Hannity or some of these others on TV who always want to point out how horrible Islam is because they hate gays and lesbians.
Right.
And they're being so short-sighted because the homosexual agenda is following the same pathway as the civil rights movement did. And those sodomites are not silent creatures. They are very aggressive and proactive and push their agenda and get into areas where they have influence. And they will condemn, and certainly we're not supporting Islam, but I do agree with their position on opposition to homosexuality. And conservatives, so often, the modern conservatives, will really rail against Islam because of their, what they say, hatred for homosexuals and lesbians. But then at the same time, they're angered by the move of a transgender move, the move to create transgender bathrooms and transgender locker rooms in schools, the showers, and all this sort of thing. They're very angered by the agenda of these people to blend and destroy our gender differences. And yet they come out and defend homosexuals and say, well, ISIS or not ISIS, Islam are bad because they hate homosexuals. And what they're doing is they're opening the door for those people, because once they accelerate in power, they're going to push their agenda into the face of Christian people nationwide.
Right.
And so I think of these people, like Hannity, and I think, don't be a moron.
Right.
You know, stand on moral principles. And if Islam hates homosexuals, don't use that as an excuse to, now we have to love homosexuals because we hate Islam.
Right.
You know, Islam is bad. They're pushing for things that are destructive to Western culture, but don't somehow then suddenly embrace a degenerate lifestyle just because somebody else does not approve it.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing as, you know, you get your homosexual the movement. Now, there's a big push, and I'm not saying everyone, but there's a big push in your homosexual movement to, you know, legalize and lower the age of pedophilia, you know. And so, but Islam, you know, they, you know, traditionally they're in favor of, you know, underage marriages and stuff like 10, 11, 12 years old. So, I mean, are you now going to be, you know, in favor of the homosexual movement because Islam is doing that too? I mean, it's just that scenario in itself just doesn't make sense. I mean, just because someone's against something, if they're against something, doesn't mean that they're automatically that you're for it.
Right. And the thing is that, and I don't understand, maybe you've got an insight more than I have, or maybe you too, Andrew. But I know that, so what we hear, I've never been to an Islamic mosque. I do have a copy of the Quran in my library. And we hear about how they are really against homosexuals. And yet, at the same time, we also hear that there's a subculture within Islam that kind of endorses or embraces it, you know, as long as it's within certain Islamic rules or something like that.
Exactly.
So I really question this phobia, so-called phobia. I should have used that word, but this opposition to homosexuality in the Islamic religion, when at the same time it seems like there is actually a great number of Muslim men who are arrested and so forth who do engage in that.
Right.
So I'm not really sure where the line is,
right,
you know, that they were,
well, the thing is,
permitted or not permitted, who's homosexual, who's not homosexual. Is homosexual somebody who's only with men, but someone who's not only with men goes all ways, is kind of okay,
right,
or just what? I don't understand.
Well, that's what I was kind of getting at, is that there is that culture in Islam where you have homosexuals and what they call faggotry, where basically it's men that act sissy, you know, then at that point, yes, they're against that. But if it's men that are considered more like manly men, you know, manly men, then it's accepted, you know. And so they, you know, you get people in these doctrines like Islam or whatever, and they try to justify their sick lifestyle. And so ultimately, when it comes down to it, it's all against Christianity. It's all anti-Christianity. The Sodomite movement, the Sodomite marriages, is, you know, everything, lifestyle of the Sodomites is anti-Christian. Islam is anti-Christian. And when you try to justify someone's sexual perversion to make that acceptable, that is still against the Christian teachings. And ultimately, the United States was built on the Christianity, you know, the Ten Commandments. And so that everything we see today, all these issues that's now regarding moral lifestyles is because we are all going against God's law. We're going against the foundation of this country, the United States, and the foundation of all Western society. And that's why we see all this, the perverted lifestyle from pedophilia to sodomite to bestiality, just anything you can think of, because we've fallen away from God's laws.
Right. Yeah. That exactly what happened, because of the fact that there is a war, worldwide war, generational war, against Christianity. It's not against Islam, not against Buddhists, not against Hindus. It's not against any of these foreign or alien religions. The target, the hatred, is Christianity.
Yeah.
And that is their target. That is what they hate.
Right. And Christianity and the white race coincides with each other. You can't have Christianity and not have the white race. You can't have the white race and not have Christianity. They go together.
Right.
And the enemy is not only bent on destroying the white race, they're also bent on destroying Christianity. And they're bent on destroying Christianity, and they're bent on destroying the white race. I mean, so they're wanting to destroy the very fabric of our people, which is our religious beliefs, as well as our blood. And that's why we, more we see the declining white population in the United States or in Europe, then you also see the declining of the Christian influence. And when you start seeing those, then we start seeing what's happening now with everything morally that is being detested traditionally, you know, sodomite marriages, and race mixing. All of those, the basic tenets of Christianity, is being attacked, and so are the people.
In 2009, shortly after Obama became president, Atlantic Magazine had an article, front page article, and the headline of the front page lead story was "The End of White America." And then it had quite a lengthy article, a lot of information in there. But it's interesting, based upon what you just said. This was in the January-February edition of Atlantic Magazine, which is very prestigious magazine read by college graduates, highly educated people, more than People magazine that you might pick at Walmart. But 3 months later, in March of the very same year, after that article ran, The End of White America, Newsweek ran a magazine titled The End of Christian America. And the two really coincide. The two are occurring at the same time. As our population of white people, who are more or less the protectors of the Christian faith, as they decline and are churches, Christian churches, become mongrelized and with the foreign element into the church, the church itself then begins to change. It happens slowly that people don't really see it. Now, you can get on TV, I know, you still have preachers talking about Jesus Christ and the faith and being born again and the cross and so forth. Okay, that's well and good. But beneath that, these same elements that are also encouraging miscegenized marriages and embracing miscegenized marriages. And then of course, that begins the whole breakdown of our resistance, the acceptance of various lifestyles. It's why the political parties keep moving towards the left. The Republican Party of today, 40 years ago, would be an extreme liberal party. You take this very political party today, put it 40 years ago, and they'll be liberal. Now, Donald Trump is bringing up some issues that would not, you know, maybe would defy what I'm just telling you. But the Republican Party as a whole.
The establishment.
Yeah. They would be considered liberals 40 years ago. And even some of the issues of Donald Trump would have been considered liberal 40 years ago. And so the whole political process is changing. Not the process, but parties. And the agenda is changing, and the Republicans are becoming more liberal, more leftist, and more socialist, even though they look extreme right-wing compared to the Democratic Party. Nevertheless, compared to the Democratic or Republican Party 40 years ago, the current Republican Party looks socialist.
It's because they're trying to cater to the demographics, non-whites.
That's right. They're catering to the demographics because we have this influx, this massive invasion of foreign blood aliens into our nation.
Well, there was an article I read a couple days ago. Now I'm going to read this article real quick. But there was an article I read a couple days ago about how, and this was this one person's commentary on Donald Trump, basically saying that Donald Trump is trying to follow the populist path that Mitt Romney did 4 years ago, you know, supposedly.
Did Romney follow the populist path?
Well, it's kind of obviously this is what he was saying, and I get what he was trying to say, but he was saying that Donald Trump is trying to win the vote by the white population. Okay, now, obviously Mitt Romney wasn't trying to do that because he's just a white guy, but that doesn't mean he was trying to do the populist vote. But this article was saying that Donald Trump is going to have a really hard time winning the presidency because if he's trying to just cater to the white vote, he might get it this time around. But 4 years from now, he definitely won't get it if the trend continues with the non-white population continually increasing. And so basically the article was like, okay, you're just trying to cater to the white vote, the traditional white population in the United States. That's kind of a failing path to take, you know.
You want to be the top dog in the
field. Because the fact is, nationally, when you add up all the non-whites together, the blacks and the Asians and the Mexicans and the Jewish vote, all those that basically are anti-white, add them all up together, and they're going to have the majority, you know. And so basically, like, okay, that's a wrong path to try to take because you're not going to be successful long-term wise. And
Now, the nation and the white people be damned.
Right.
If you want to pursue your political career, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Nationwide. Now, you know, and this is something we've been saying all along, right, that the majority of your non-white population is on your western coast, eastern coast. You know, and obviously you have non-whites in the heartland of America. But your vast majority of that is in those different coastal states, and your white population are moving to the heartland of America. And I want to read this real quick. It's about a paragraph long. This is something we've said, we've reported on, but I think it's always good to read stuff like this again so it kind of refreshes our memory, and especially some of these audience members here may have not ever heard of this, but this is from March of 2015. This is reported by Breitbart News. Okay, if you go to Breitbart.com, and they were reporting on the recent Census Bureau's statistics. of course, this came out last year, so now we're 1 year ahead now, 2016. But this says a new report from the Census Bureau predicts that nearly one-fifth of America's total population will be foreign-born in a mere 45 years. Immigrants, legal and illegal, will enjoy 85% growth from 42 million to 78 million by 2060. In contrast, the native-born population, which includes children born to illegal aliens, will increase by 22% or 62 million. Non-Hispanic native-born whites are the only racial and ethnic group expected to suffer a population decline. In 45 years' time, their numbers will decline by 16 million or 8% from 198 million to 182 million. They will make up only 44% of the nation's population. The Census Bureau points out that births of non-Hispanic, native-born white Americans will decrease by a predicted 23%. The Hispanic population, comprised of a variety of ethnicities from South America to Mexico, will enjoy a population explosion of 55 million in 2014 to 119 million by 2060. And unless current immigration policies change, they will be 29% of the population present in the U.S. at that time. That's just Mexicans. You know, that doesn't take consideration your blacks, your Asian, your huge Asian population growth, your obviously your Muslims, you know, and Arabs. And so when we talk, and so basically all the non-white populations are going to continue to increase. The white population is the only one that will start decreasing significantly because the white baby boomer generation starts to dying off. And so I know I was reading this yesterday, and of course we had reported this. I remember, you know, I reported it, and Dad, you and Rachel on the news last year had reported the same statistics. But you know, I was just sitting there last night, I was reading this, and I'm thinking, you know, I got, you know, four or five kids, you know, Caleb's 10 years old, to the youngest one, Abigail, who's just turned a year. And 45 years, they're going to be about my age. And they're going to be in America that will no longer be a white population, you know. And my opinion, when they talk about these statistics, I believe it's a conservative figure. I don't believe that those are going to be accurate. I think it's going to be a lot more than that. And it seems to... It seems depressing, you know, a lot of times, and it is, obviously. But I do know that there is hope in the future, because we know that there is going to be a shakeup demographically regarding a population shift where white people are moving to the heartland of America. We know there's going to be a starting becoming balkanization. White people will start actually think of themselves as a white race. And like Rachel will say all the time, the upside of white genocide, people will start doing that. And then ultimately, I know God is not going to forget his people. He's not going to forget his covenant. He is going to watch out over us. But it's, I mean, these are hard times, right? Very hard times. And it's not something that I want to see. Definitely don't want to see, you know, my children having to go through it. I know they will, but it just surprises me when you see right now what's going to happen in the future, and so many people are oblivious to it, you know, yeah. To the point that either they don't care or they just literally are just oblivious. I mean, they don't think it's really going to change anything.
Right.
You know,
I'm going to point out a couple of things you said, Jason. one is this, while it comes as a shock to many people when they see this happening, it really should not have been a shock, because I know, because I've got old books, but J.L. O.K. Smith, as early as 1952, now how many, that's 48, 58? That's 65 years ago.
Right.
J.L. O.K. Smith, because there were efforts in play in 1952 to change our immigration laws. And J.L. O.K. Smith, people may not know who he is, but give a little brief history. Go to You can go to the Wikipedia and type in Gerald L. K. Smith. You can read a little at the bottom. But he was a nationwide spokesman, held rallies throughout the country, large publication, and built a couple of tourist attractions that are still visited by thousands of people every year in Eureka Springs. Gerald L. K. Smith, in his publication, The Cross and the Flag, in 1952, said that efforts were applied to change immigration laws and alter the voting demographics so that the white people will no longer be able to control the political power in their country. Now, that was 65 years ago. He was warning people about that. He was telling people at mass rallies, this is what is happening. You may not see it yet because we're in a population that's over 92% white. You may not see it, but this is their playbook. And in 1965, the immigration laws was passed. So 13 years later, after he was given this warning, our immigration laws was passed. Ted Kennedy said it'll be no change. It's just kind of a little tweaking our immigration policy a little bit. But within a couple of years, we started receiving massive immigration from third world countries. And it continued to grow. And this was forced upon Americans, not because people got them voted for it, but it was done by the politicians in Washington, D.C., Republican and Democratic politicians both, perhaps many times in guilt or a false sense of responsibility, their Christian duty to the underprivileged people of the world, open our doors, let them come in, and we'll turn them into Americans. So that began to change, and now this flood is upon us. So Gerald L. K. Smith was warning this in 1952, but even Time magazine, which was read by people throughout the country, in 1990 said this is what's going to happen. And with a front page lead story titled The Changing Colors of America.
Right.
Telling us that this flood is coming. Now, they were not necessarily against it. They're just reporting facts.
Yeah, this is what's going to happen statistically.
And now it's upon us, and many people are suddenly beginning to become concerned, and that's why there's support for Donald Trump. Same thing happened in England back in the 60s. There's a politician, well-known politician, almost became prime minister of England, named Enoch Powell. He warned, we got to do something to stop this flood of immigrants. And it was just a trickle back then, but then England became flooded with immigrants. There's whole cities that are in England now that are dominated by Muslims. And that's part of the reason.
Well, they have a Muslim mayor.
Absolutely. In London, the mayor is a Muslim. Absolutely. And so from that, that's what stimulated the Brexit vote to leave the EU, the European Union, because people didn't want their country changed. All right. So that leads me to the second point I want to make at, is all this has been coming. So now all these third world people are flooding to our country. It's changing our political structure. It's changing the appeal that politicians make to the voters, because now they don't make an appeal to the white voters anymore. They're appeals to the non-white voters, because that's what they need to have to get their little political power and stay in office and get reelected. And so we have this shift. So now we're America 2016, and we got a huge flood. We got the baby boomers going to be dying off. We're going to this mushroom at the top of a white population. You're going to suddenly, within a matter of a few years, just going to burst. And in a few generations, short generations, there's going to be this huge white people who are still in this country. What is estimated 150 million or something at that time?
Yeah, it's 100 and let me just get up here. Just the Mexican population will be 119 million by 2060.
But the white population will be down to somewhere around 150 or 60 million at that time.
Yeah.
And the nation would be close to 400 million.
Right.
And so, but here's
44% basically. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So here's the point I'm getting at. Okay. All these immigrants are good. I'm trying to give some spin now to something positive for the future. All these immigrants that are coming in here that have changed its demographics are going to be mainly on the eastern coast and the western coast, according to demographers. Time magazine ran an article in 2010 called the White Identity Crisis, which pointed that out also. All right, here's the point I'm getting at now. The vast majority of these people now living in America are going to be from where? Third world countries. Is there Are there any third world countries that are financially secure? There is none.
Yeah.
All third world country in total economic chaos. What that means is as America becomes a third world country, because that's what it means.
Right.
These people that are coming here are not becoming and building America strong. They're going to be weakening America, and America will begin its financial economic decline right. into third world status.
Exactly. Okay.
That means we have weakened the federal government, weakened the power, and a weaker resolve to force themselves upon the populace. So at that point, Time Magazine says one of the things that's going to happen, and they said this is an alarming fact, but it's still, I don't think it's alarming.
Not alarming to us.
Not alarming to us. They said in the heartland, as you point out, there's going to be growing, white people can begin developing a sense of a racial identity, and then out of that, they said demagogues are going to rise.
Yeah.
And this is what we've been saying for a long time now. We believe we're right on target, right on track, exactly what's going to happen. And so we're looking to the future, 15, 20, 25, 30, I don't know, but into this future in which white people in the natural world, I don't know what God's going to do. He doesn't confide in me on a daily basis. He doesn't give me a weekly briefing, or a morning briefing update. So I don't know. I just know that in our own world, we have to, when you give it the morning, you figure, I got to go to work today. I've got to make some money, buy groceries.
Right.
You don't say, well, I'm going to sit here in my living room, wait till God shows me what to do.
Right.
No, you go about your daily affairs and do what you have to do with the requirements and obligation, responsibilities you have for that day. Likewise, we have to face the world today. We have to follow certain responsibilities, obligations, and responsibilities that are upon us this day. God can interfere somewhere along the line. He's welcome to interfere. We're not in any way denying his interference. But in the meantime, we still have to do what we can do. And in that regard, I believe we are going to see this federal government, the huge national debt is not going to go lower. It can't go lower. In spite of what everybody says, it can't go lower because we're stuck to this false Federal Reserve.
Yeah, the monetary system.
The monetary system. And the monetary system is corrupt in its very core. You cannot
pay down the national debt.
You can't climb out of that debt. You can't climb out of it. And that's another whole story. There's a video that is being produced by a fellow named Scott Templeton, who gives an excellent presentation of that. It's almost completed, and we're going to have that available, but shows how this monetary system that we incorporate into our country in 1913 is really has created this national debt. So with all that said and done, there's hope in the fact that we have to concentrate raising children, concentrating them, loving their people, loving their God, focusing on a positive future, and attempting to present them into areas and introduce them into areas where they can have some influence upon their communities as this decline continues.
Well, and exactly. And part of that is for people. Just got to stay committed, you know. Even though all this stuff's going around and can get depressing, we still have a duty to stay committed to God's faith and God's word. We still have to stay committed. Even though we may in our mind think, is there really not much I can do? And you're right. Most of us might not be able really do anything significantly, you know, but we still have a duty to ourselves, to God, to stay committed. We still have a duty to our children to stay committed.
There's no excuse what I'm going to say. Everybody can at least take one piece of literature and leave it on the table of a restaurant, leave it at a counter somewhere, leave it on a shirt rack at Walmart. They can do at least one piece of literature. It may not seem a lot, but if you can't even do that, then you might as well join the other side.
Right. And everyone, not some, everyone can donate. Everyone can tithe. Everyone can financially support this movement, such as the Knights Party. People can donate. People say, oh, I'm really broke or whatever. Well, okay, you can send $5. If you're going to go out to a dinner and spend $40 or $50, you're not really broke.
They're spending $6 a day for cigarettes.
Right.
You know, they're renting video games or movies for $4, $5, $10 a week. If they can send a few dollars.
Right.
And there's no excuse for that.
Exactly. So people can do stuff, and people can still be involved. They may not in their mind think, oh, well, I can't be out on the street and proclaim this wonderful message to everyone. Everyone's going to listen to me. Yeah, you're right. You're not going to be able to do that for the most part. But you can do something.
But there are people who can.
Right.
There are people who can. We are very effective here at what we're doing. We got a 24-hour radio broadcast, White Pride Radio. We got a daily broadcast on the White Resistance News. Daily Wake Up America broadcast. Those broadcasts live television, live every day of the week. We've got our billboard out of the highway, attracting thousands of people going past every single day. We have our publication. We have our media interviews. The center here.
It's increased significantly.
It's increasing, and I'm really humbled in saying this, but there literally is no other place in the country that has become the focal point right. of the white resistance.
Absolutely.
There are people, you go to the website, you see a bunch of websites and so forth, or you could, some of these people have their internet radio, they go on talk radio.
They'll do a podcast or something like that.
But as a center,
right.
you know, concrete and mortar where people, families can come and have family retreat and get rejuvenated, get encouraged, be inspired. That is the emblem of this white resistance. There's not a single place in the country.
There isn't. And I was just, in the past 2 weeks, we've had Channel 4 from England, which is one of the competing TV stations of BBC. So you have BBC and
it's
Channel
major
4. Major networks in England. You had Channel 4 coming here specifically to here to talk about the nights and the growth and all the outreach projects we have. We had a radio or a TV station from South Africa coming here. So when we talk about we have reporters coming in, we're not talking about just local reporters coming here. I mean, these are international reporters.
Once or twice a year.
Yeah, and they're constantly coming here, I mean, every week. And that's a positive thing.
Right now.
Because they would not be coming here if we were not doing anything.
Right.
They're coming here because they see
the news.
They see the growth that's happening. They see the activities of the members. They see what's happening on the internet. I mean, they see this phenomenon that is happening, and they're taking it newsworthy. They figure it's a newsworthy.
Right.
And so when we talk about the stuff that's happening here, it is serious. It really is.
Yeah. Well, you know, these things aren't happening, so people do need to be involved. There's no excuse. I mean, I find people hear excuses, but there is no excuse.
There is no excuse.
That people can do something. It may seem little. It may not be as much as you like to do. I mean, people might say, I wish I could do more. Well, you know, you have to be faithful in the little things.
Absolutely.
You know, we're told in the scripture, be faithful in the little things. Well, you can't be faithful in the big. If you think you can be faithful in the big things, well, if you think you want to do more, you don't really want to do more.
Right.
You're just saying that to make yourself feel good.
Sure.
If you want to do more, then start by doing the little things.
Well, like you said that a couple of weeks ago in one of your sermons, you know, you said, you know, take your child, or if you're a grandparent, take one of your grandchildren, looking them in the eye, and basically saying you're not worth it.
Yeah.
You know. And that's really, really, that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
I mean, people say, oh, I have an excuse. Well, go to your 5-year-old, your 10-year-old.
Look straight in the eye.
Look in the eye and say, you're just not worth it.
I'm too busy.
Yeah, you're too busy. I'm too busy. You're not worth it.
No.
Damn for your future. I don't really care. Because that's what you're basically doing.
Yeah.
You know? And I pity those people and are sorrowful for those people who have that idea that their children are not worth it. Yeah.
Well, they live, love, laugh, and be happy for today, without thinking about the consequences of the future.
I of course, being an attorney here in Harrison, you know, I deal with a lot of people, older folks that come in, they're doing wills and stuff like that, and I try to say it nicely, you know, but so often, I mean, the repeating theme I hear from these white older folks when they come in is they're like always talking about how bad it's getting worse, and they're like, thank God I'm going to die so I don't see it, you know. And I try to be nice, but I say, well, what about your children? What about your grandchildren? Do you care about what they're going to face? And almost every time I ask that question, it's like a light bulb all of a sudden it clicks on in their brain and they're like, well, I didn't really think about that.
No.
You know, I didn't think of how my children are going to suffer, my grandchildren. And that kind of sparks conversations with them saying, well, you kind of should, you know, because, yeah, you're going to be dead and gone. No question about it. Another 5, 10, 15 years, you will be dead and gone. But your children, your grandchildren are going to see this mess. They're going to suffer for it. And so if you see all these problems now with the Black Lives Matter movement, blacks just going out there and just looking for white cops and killing them, looking for white people on the streets when they're doing the demonstrations and just killing them or raping them, just imagine when your children and grandchildren 20, 30 years from now, when they have reached adulthood and the non-white population now is a majority non-white population, what's going to really happen? We see this race war that's happening now. Just imagine when the white population will definitely no longer be in control. And it's those things in my mind is like so simple, and right. It's like they've never thought of it.
Yeah. And those are just the physical threats. There's an inner spiritual threat that people don't think of either.
Right.
And that is, are your children being prepared to be able to withstand the propaganda that is coming from the schools, coming from magazines, coming from television? But unfortunately, and people even, their guard has been dropped totally, is coming from your churches.
Right.
You know, people need to ask, is their pastor, people listening to this program today, does your preacher warn the congregation about the sins of miscegenation, about sodomy, what's happened? Are their children being prepared? Are they being taught that? Or the preacher just excuse it because it's controversial and it's not popular and doesn't want to talk about it? Yeah. And if they're attending the church and the preacher is not sending out a message of warning to our children and our people because he's afraid of being controversial, then they need to get out of that church.
Right.
That church is not doing you any favor. And I don't care how many times he calls, makes an altar call and sings Old Rugged Cross. I don't care about that stuff. I care about the Old Rugged Cross, obviously. But I'm saying is, no matter how many times he says those things, if the underlying message is creating a weak faith in the hearts of the people who cannot withstand the onslaught against a Christian faith, then the pastor is a weakling, a false shepherd, and people need to get out of that church.
Well, and the thing is, yeah, because your kids and grandkids can grow up and still be considered white, but are they morally been degenerated? You know, are they growing up believing that race mixing is okay?
Right.
Is sodomy okay? Abortion okay? Everything traditionally that we hold love and held dear to our hearts, if they no longer embrace that and now embrace the sick, filthy lifestyle, then they've been lost as well.
Yeah, it's like that figure we gave earlier, 144, 150 million white people.
Yeah.
That doesn't include that a lot of those white people could be involved in interracial relationships. They're going to be homosexuals or lesbians or transgender or whatever the case may be.
Adopting non-white kids.
Yeah. So while the statistics of white people, in other words, if you see a white couple, a white man in this down the corner, he married to a black woman. And you see that white guy is in the white statistics,
right?
But morally and spiritually, and he has, and culturally, he's already abandoned our white heritage.
Yeah.
So when you look at that figure, 150 yeah. million people, how many of those are really still morally, spiritually, and culturally white?
Right.
And that number is going to be in greatly reduced. Even today, white people who are morality is spiritually and culturally, white people are still in tune with the faith of our forefathers, the heritage of our forefathers, the laws of our forefathers, the keeping of our culture, the heritage of faith. That number is a startling minority.
Yeah. Well, the population I was looking up here, with the predict as far as the white population, in 45 years will be 182 million.
All right. But yet, but how many of those, and that will be a minority of the population.
Yeah, country. That's 44%.
Right. How many of those 182 million are going to be still culturally and morally and spiritually white?
Exactly. Because, like you said, you could have a good so-called Christian white family, but they've adopted a Asian kid, black, whatever. That family in the next generation is lost because they most likely are in favor of international marriages and interracial marriages. Yeah. They're in favor of that. And so the next generation, yeah, will definitely be lost.
Yeah.
You know, because they're going in favor of that black kid marrying a white girl.
Right.
You know, so
their spiritual soul has been destroyed.
Absolutely.
It's like the body snatcher. They're still walking around in a white body, but the spirit.
Well, you know, we're talking about pastors, and I'm not going to name any names or any church, but there is a very, very conservative church in Harrison, and a lot of the people that attended this church are what I would call identity, and they are they believe in, you know, the Southern cause and stuff like that. And a lot of, and it's not really a big church, but they have a 30, 40 people, you know, probably in the congregation in town. And they were, a vast majority of them was at this protest at the Harrison Pride Festival a couple weeks ago. And so they were the good people, really good people. But I was wondering, I was looking around thinking, I wonder if their pastor is going to be here demonstrating.
No.
Pastor wasn't seen at all. Pastor wasn't there. And so here's this church that for the most part, I would say is racially aware, racially attuned to our beliefs.
But it's not in the forefront of this.
They're not in the forefront. No, that's what I'm saying. They're
conservative.
No, they're just conservative, you know. But you have some members in that church that are racially aware from the standpoint they don't believe in race mixing. They don't believe in sodomites. They, you know, so they don't believe in that. But I'm thinking, okay, here we are, because the people here at the nice party, local members and the Christian Revival Center was there. We had our Confederate flags, you know, stand up for traditional marriages and everything. But I was looking around and said, okay, was this pastor at this local church, was he here? You know, he wasn't. And I'm thinking, okay, here's a so-called conservative pastor who believes in everything that most people believe in, white Americans. Not even there.
Gutless.
And I'm like, that's pretty pathetic. That's pretty sad.
Yeah. And we wonder why our nation's in decline.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I know we have just a few minutes.
Yeah.
So people, I really would encourage everyone to, you know, we've got 2 weeks. Really make an effort to attend the Nice Party Family Congress. And if you've never been here before, really make plans. You just have to do it. It's so vitally important for you and your spouse and your children to be around at other like-minded people, like-minded families that have the love and desire to preserve your race and your faith and your homeland. Have your children surrounded by other kids that love your race. It's so vitally important. And you can email. What's the email? Because we have so many.
Christian Revival South. Revival@southshore.com.
Revival@southshore.com. Revival@southshore.com. They can also call 870-427-3414. They can get more information. And then also.
They can register online.
SaveAmericanHeritage.com. Okay, that's a good thing. There's some pictures there and everything else. And also, we have the European American Heritage Festival coming
October
up on the fourth Saturday in October. And it's in Pulaski, Tennessee, held on the square. It's a nice, relaxing event. People walk around the square. We have different booths there of American history. It's the only place in the United States there is a Walk for White Pride. You get to carry your flag of your ancestry, walk around, and the kids, they get to carry their flags. Andrew, do you like carrying the flag?
Totally.
Is there a certain flag you like to grab? Because I know some people actually have a certain flag they like to have.
I don't know any specific.
No? Nothing specific?
No.
The Confederate flag or the German flag or Scottish? No. Don't tread on me.
Whatever flag you get.
Yeah, any flag you can get. So,
any flag you get.
But yeah,
it's all good.
It's all good. They're all just, it represents the same ideas. But yeah, you see people walking around on the square, you know, in this Walk for White Pride, and again, you know, the effort is do something in order to encourage your children and grandchildren that they have a right to exist. They have a right to preserve their culture. And right. attending this event is just one way you can do that.
Yeah. People need to begin making plans now. Don't wait till middle of October. Oh, by the way, you know, start making plans now to be there. Get down here to Congress. It's not that far.
How much is your children worth it? Yeah. I mean, it comes back to that. How much are your children worth it? You know, if you have to leave Thursday to get here Friday or Friday and then leave Sunday night after the cross lighting, you do that. How much is your children worth?
Yeah, kids are going to love, embrace, and get excited over things that you love, embrace, and get excited over. If you get excited over the football, then your kids will get to be excited over football. If you're excited over playing soccer, your kids will be excited over soccer. If you're excited about going camping, the kids will be excited about going camping. So be excited about this thing. Be excited about the future of yourself, your nation, your people, your heritage. You be excited about those things. Love those things. Demonstrate the love you have for those things. Don't demonstrate a negativity, a hatred towards minorities, but demonstrate love for your people, love for your flag, love for your heritage, love for your history, love for the architecture of your people, love for our music, love for all those things that people have produced. Demonstrate on a daily basis your love and your embrace of those things, and your kids will learn to love and embrace those things also. And part of that is showing them that you want to be around others who will help you be stronger, help you be encouraged. So you want to demonstrate to them that you want to go to these conferences. You're excited about it. You can't wait to go. And your kids will be excited and can't wait to go either. And you'll come down here for a great time. It's just something you need to do. And I can't emphasize how important it is. And yet, for some reason, so often I say things like this to people and it goes to deaf ears. So I don't know. But do get excited about those things. And I think we're about out of time, Jason. I do want to say that, listen, everybody can do something. I urge you right now, we are not financed by Wall Street, George Soros. We're financed by people who love America. If you love America in your heart and not in words only, then you need to go, as soon as this broadcast is over, you need to go back and click on that donate button and make the most generous contribution you can. For yourselves and for the future of children, you need to do it today.
Well, I think that really is good, and hopefully, we will see a lot of people. I know we have a lot of people coming to Congress, and we're excited about that. And I can't stress it enough. And Monday, after Congress, we will be getting ready for Pulaski, Tennessee.
Well, until next time, this is Thomas Robb.
Jace Robb.
Andrew Thomas.
And just reminding you to love your God and to love your people.